It's hard to visualize that people in the late 1800s could have the kind of vision when it was a city of about 3,000 people, that 1,400 acres would be meaningful to the development of the community. This kind of thinking was real thoughtful at the time.
When they set aside this land, 1,400 acres in 1868, many people thought it was ridiculous, but the city fathers of that time thought if they didn't set aside that land, that it might all be bought up and subdivided. Of course, they were hoping that the railroad was going to be completed through into San Diego and that the population would boom, and they wisely thought they would set aside this large amount of land at that time, 1868. The reason they chose the site, incidentally, it had no great natural beauty of its own. It was sagebrush and chaparral and had a couple of big canyons in it, but they chose it because of its height. And it was valued chiefly in the beginning for the views from it rather than of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, since that time, the park has seen many changes and has come to serve many purposes in its role as our major city park.
Certainly its function for developing tourist interest, whether it through the exposition or through the expositions, I should say, in 1915 and again in 1935. And then the whole cultural center of the park being of value to our own community and our own citizens, both countywide, as well as being a tourist, of interest to tourists. Very few tourists would come to visitors come to San Diego without making a trip to Balboa Park, whether it's to the zoo, the Fine Arts Gallery, or the museums, Natural History Museum of Man, or even into the Hall of Champions, and of course soon into a renovated Aerospace Museum.
The Bartholomew Report, which considered proposals for master planning of Balboa Park and redeveloping some areas and so on, mentioned that as an economic generator, they considered that Balboa Park at that time in 1960 when they did the report was the number one tourist attraction in San Diego, of course, you know, including the zoo as part of the park.
Going a little further with the Bartholomew report, when you indicated the number of interests and how Balboa Park serves the community, I think it's important, and Bartholomew pointed it out, that active recreation areas, in which particularly in the Morley Field area off of Texas and Upas, where there are tennis courts and baseball diamonds and swimming pool, the cultural center of the park around El Prado, where all of the museums are located, plus the zoo is an active spectator area, and then again the tremendous areas for picnicking and lawn and casual recreation. As you know, I was recreation director prior to being part of the park and recreation department being combined. So one of the reasons for the combination of the park and recreation department was really to attempt to make parks more available to people for their leisure time. And so with that, with the building of activities to place in the facilities that were recently renovated immediately after the war, began the development of all of our youth symphony, junior theater, use by Sweet Adelines and or barbershop quartets. The Globe came back into the Globe Theater where they had been prior to the war but were out during the war years, and really under the leadership of the Park and Recreation Board and then City Council, they were most anxious, particularly the mayor, Harley Knox, was particularly anxious to make the park the going community center of San Diego.
Pauline DeGrange, retired head of the Park and Recreation Department of the City of San Diego. Now I would like to ask if that idea of a cultural center in the midst of a city park is unusual as you look around the country.
It's certainly unusual to have the number and quality of museums located so closely together. We're I think, very lucky to have this kind of cultural complex in one place and in such a beautifully landscaped place and in such an accessible place. It's right in the heart of the city. And having these buildings and then, of course, having the active recreational facilities, too, that are located elsewhere in the park really makes this San Diego's community center. We have something that has been compared to, let's say, the mall in Washington, D.C., which, of course, has the marvelous Smithsonian Institution Museums. Their facilities and their collections, of course, are far superior to what we have here in San Diego. But aside from that, there is a comparison to be made in the fact that we have the different kinds of museums, and they're all located together in this lovely area along El Prado. And the reason for that, of course, is that the buildings had been saved from the 1915 exposition. If they had been torn down, probably various museum facilities would have been located in other areas throughout the city, and it's unlikely that they really would have been drawn together. But the existence of the buildings themselves helped to foster the development of those cultural institutions. Here they were, the space was available, and groups moved in and formed the Museum of Natural History, the Museum of Man, the Fine Arts Gallery, several others.
We've had a close look at the development of Balboa Park, and we return now to some recollections of the woman who is known as the mother of Balboa Park and the subject of this program, Kate Sessions. When Kate Sessions came first to San Diego, she became a school teacher. That profession didn't work out, and she soon went into the nursery business. But she continued to teach in a more general sense of the word, and in fact taught many school children about plants. Architect Sam Hamill remembers Kate Sessions from his own school days.
Yes, people talk about modern school practices and so on. I enjoyed experiences in grammar school, which the kids today don't have the opportunity. You know, Kate Sessions went around from school to school, and about once a month she gave nature talks to the 6th, 7th, and 8th graders at Brooklyn School, and I remember those. She was a woman who commanded great respect and attention. She must have had tremendous character because the children understood that, and it was a quiet, attentive group of youngsters that listened to her, particularly through her course in acacias and the eucalyptus, which told us many, many things which I have remembered to this day.
San Diego architect Sam Hamill. Another San Diegan who was associated with Kate Sessions is Chauncey Jerebeck. He came to San Diego near the beginning of the century. He brought with him an interest in horticulture from the East and was quite surprised at the different types of plants he found here. He met Kate Sessions, and she later wrote a letter of recommendation for his first job here at the Scripps Ranch at Miramar. That letter, by the way, is on file at the San Diego Historical Society Library. Later, he became park horticulturist for the city. He served in that position from 1917 until 1956. He remembers Kate Sessions and his early impressions of the plants that grew in his new hometown.
Right after I came to San Diego, I was about 1910 or 11, I can't pin it right down. I was working at my uncle's, and a woman across the street had a little greenhouse, and she recommended me to go to Kate. She knew I was looking for something to do. And Kate had her nursery at Fort Stockton and Stevenson Street. And I went out there in the streetcar and had a talk with her. And she impressed me very much as a woman that knew what she was talking about, you know. Of course, coming out here from the east, it was entirely different for me when I saw it here, because everything we grew up back there was in clay pots. Out here, they used tin cans, and that was new. And the trees I saw here, like the bougainvillea, back there, if we had one to put high, we sold it as a table decoration. And when I saw them over two-story buildings, and silk oak we grew as a table decoration, and it grew 35 feet, 40 feet high here. So, you know, I was really impressed with there. And then Kate, she seemed to be so well-informed on all the trees, which were, were strangers to me because I'd never seen them before. They were mostly Australian trees they had out here then.
Now, what was she like? You said that she impressed you as being extremely knowledgeable about the plants. Was she easy to meet? Was she someone who was very friendly to you at first? Or what was she like?
Well, I'll tell you what Kate was like at a meeting, like a floral meeting. Mm-hmm. She could bring in a little weed and talk about it, and we all wanted to go home and plant some. That's how interesting she was.
She could make almost any plant come to life. And
Yeah, that's it. No matter what you put up there, before she got through, we all wanted some in our garden. If you wanted to landscape your place and you wouldn't dig a good hole for it, she wouldn't sell you nothing. She just wouldn't sell you something. You had to plant it right, or she wouldn't sell you a thing. If it had a 35 cents plant in a $5 hole, that's what she used to say. But another thing about her, if something was going on around town and she saw it and didn't think it was right, she'd stop. Now, when the Santa Fe I imagine it's 1915, they built a new depot down there. And there's four palms like that in a square. Mm-hmm. Well, the new depot, they wanted to take them up to Los Angeles. Oh, boy, did she go down there and bawl them people out. And she said, taking everything that we got nice up to Los Angeles. You leave those palms here. And boy, they did. Mm-hmm. And then she was riding around town, and she saw somebody planting something, and she didn't think it was right. She'd stop her car and bawl them out, no matter who it was. Somebody, now like out in the curb there, between the parking, mm-hmm. they was paving it instead of planting something in there. Boy, she'd get out and bawl them out for paving it. Yeah.
Chauncey Jerebeck says that Kate Sessions helped him to find his first job and throughout his career shared her ever-increasing knowledge of plants with him. She had a tremendous influence on everyone in this area who showed an interest in horticulture.
Well, I think all Southern California might find some people that worked for her now and then and then went into business for themselves. I'm sure there's people like that. And I know there's different ones, and I imagine they all worked for it sometime or other, and she inspired them to get in business for themselves.
Retired park horticulturist Chauncey Jerebeck. Now, Chauncey Jerebeck did quite a bit of work in terms of evaluating what Kate Sessions' contributions were, didn't he?
Yes. In Elizabeth MacPhail's book on Kate Sessions, she includes a list that Jerebeck compiled of the trees and plants that Kate Sessions either introduced or popularized and made widely used in Southern California. And that list itself is 4 pages long. That gives you some idea of the tremendous number of different kinds of plants and trees that she was associated with and advised people to plant, experimented with, and saw to it were planted in Balboa Park and throughout the canyons and other places in San Diego.
Well, in many ways, through the plants she introduced to this area, she determined to a very great extent the present-day character of San Diego. and it is for this reason that she stands out, according to her biographer, Elizabeth MacPhail.
It was stimulating, the idea that things grew in San Diego that were not what people who came from the East would bring with them, or would they wanted new things. And people who came from the East thought of Southern California as being more or less of a paradise. And she was the one who showed them the types of plants that grew here and grew well, and she encouraged them to plant things that beautified the community. And, of course, we always had a shortage of water, and this has always been a problem in San Diego. And so she would show them things that perhaps could grow with a minimum amount of water, but which would beautify the city. And this is her greatest contribution, is the beautification not only of Balboa Park, but of all parts of the city through her influence. She was not a hybridizer such as Luther Burbank. In other words, she did not develop new plants. What she did was import, not only from the United States, but from foreign countries, South America, the South Pacific, and Hawaii, and Africa, plants. And she got them, and many of them came and were sent out to her by the plant introduction agency in Washington, D.C., when they found out that she was working at this sort of thing. And so she developed plants from all over the world and would try them out. Now, some of them thrived, and then others did not. But the Bird of Paradise is one that she brought in from out that has thrived in San Diego. The bougainvillea was one of her favorite introductions. The poinsettias were brought in, and she and her brother developed poinsettias and were sending them out in carloads long before Paul Ecke and the people up in Northern County have started their development. In fact, they were the Sessions were the first people to ship poinsettias out of the Southern California area in carloads, as a matter of fact, around the Christmas time. Her claim to fame, or one of the greatest accomplishments and honors that came to her, was in her last year, in 1939, that she was awarded the Meyer Medal, which is given by the American Genetics Association, and is given to the person who has done the most in plant introductions into the United States, and particularly for the Cocos plumosa palm, for the twisted juniper, for bougainvilleas, and for ice plants. And so she received that medal in Pasadena at an award at her ceremony in Pasadena. And she was the first woman. They had given 15 medals, and she was the first woman to receive it. And so that was her highest accomplishment that was recognized. But by that time, by the 1930s, she was recognized as the Dean of California Horticulturist. Everyone in California knew her, and she was well known throughout the world. When she traveled to Europe in 1926, when she came back, she said, "Well, my name is better known in Europe than it is here in San Diego." Well, actually, it wasn't, but she was so surprised that to every garden or every nursery that she went to, a large one in Europe, why, they recognized her name. The Federal Office of Plant Introduction in Washington, in the Interior Department, was very interested in her work, and the men from there would come out to San Diego and look at her nursery and the things that she had grown, and she tried out plants for them, determined which ones would grow well in Southern California. And her research was looked on with as of great importance.
Elizabeth MacPhail, who wrote the book Kate Sessions, Pioneer Horticulturist.
I was thinking of Kate Sessions in terms of a phrase that became popular a few years ago, the greening of America. I think of Kate Sessions as the woman who was responsible for the greening of San Diego. And then as I thought about that, I thought, well, you know, it's not just green. certainly she was responsible for introducing great number of different kinds of palm trees, pine trees, fig trees, and other kinds of things that are green. But she also was responsible for, if not introducing, at least for popularizing a lot of other trees that have many other colors. And these have enriched the beauty of the city tremendously. I think of the jacaranda tree, very unusual tree with its brilliant blue blossoms. And then the acacia was one of her favorites, too, with its yellow flowers. And, of course, there's a beautiful tree that's a tribute to Kate Sessions. It marks the site of her nursery in Pacific Beach. It's called a Tipuana tree, and it has lovely golden-colored blossoms. And as Elizabeth McPhail mentioned, Kate Sessions was very responsible for introducing bougainvillea and poinsettias. So we have the red colors as well. And so we can certainly think of her as having brought a great deal of color to San Diego, and our lives are, I think, immeasurably enriched by all of the landscaping that she, more than any other single individual, is really responsible for.
Well, how would you sum up the effect that Kate Sessions has had on the city?
Well, certainly she was a pioneer horticulturist, and she introduced many of the plants and trees that have absolutely transformed not only San Diego, but Southern California generally, because her advice was taken elsewhere. And, you know, she first came here, as Elizabeth pointed out, in the 1880s, and after a very brief stint as a school teacher and administrator, then she devoted herself to what was her real love, the growing and experimenting with different kinds of plants and trees. See, she certainly earned that title of the Mother of Balboa Park because of her activities in planting and landscaping there, and converted that area, which really was just a dusty, relatively barren mesa covered with sagebrush and chaparral, into what we now think of as a very lush garden setting. She was, I think, unusual, too, in her interest in science. Certainly when she went to college, that in itself was an unusual thing, and she is the first woman to get a degree in science from the University of California, going, you know, all the way back to around 1880. And then she went on to build this outstanding career in a profession that ordinarily was not one that women went into. Well, I think another way of looking at Kate Sessions is that she was a conservationist and environmentalist in an era before those terms were anywhere near as popular as they are today. She really understood the scientific aspects of climate and soil, and one of the stories that Glenn Rick told about her, I think, is illustrative of her devotion to the city and also of her scientific knowledge. He said that when she was on her deathbed, literally ill in the hospital before she died, that she asked him to come and talk to her. Glenn Rick at that time was city planner for San Diego, and Freeway 5 was about to be developed, and she wanted to tell him what kinds of things ought to be planted. And he said that he was so impressed with her knowledge that she knew about the different soil conditions all the way from downtown San Diego all the way on up to Del Mar, and she wanted to suggest the kinds of things that would grow well in those areas and that would not require a great deal of water. And I think also in terms of the really lasting significance of what she has done, I'm reminded of a plaque that I saw in the piazza, which is on a high hill overlooking the city of Florence, for which Michelangelo did so much in terms of building and sculpture. And there is a marker up there on this piazza. It says it's dedicated to Michelangelo. And if you would if you would see his memorial, look around you. And I think we can say that also when we look at the beautiful landscaping of San Diego, Balboa Park, and elsewhere, we can say of Kate Sessions, if you would see her memorial, look around you.
Dr. Claire Crane, San Diego historian and chief consultant for this series of programs on San Diego history. The next program in our series deals with another great woman, Ellen Browning Scripps. She was a gifted writer, journalist, and newspaper executive. At the age of 60, she retired and settled in San Diego and devoted herself to the promotion of education, recreation, and culture. Her life is the subject of next week's program. 12 Who Shaped San Diego is a series of radio programs on local history, biographies of 12 great men and women who have left their mark on today's San Diego. The programs are heard each week at 12:30 Tuesday afternoon, with a repeat broadcast Wednesday night at 8 o'clock. A resource packet is available with the programs. Send $2 to KPBS-FM, San Diego 92182, and ask for the San Diego History Resource Packet. We also welcome your comments on this series. The address, again, is KPBS-FM, San Diego 92182. I'm Peter Hamlin, series producer, thanking you for joining us. 12 Who Shaped San Diego is a production of public radio station KPBS-FM and is made possible by a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities.